Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, Tanur Rabbanan. The Gemara had gotten onto a tangent because we were explaining the word Aliyah in the Mishnah, and we brought a pasuk from Divrei Yamim with regards to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Rabbi Elazar gave us the explanation of that. From that, it parlayed into additional Memrot, Agadic explanations of Rabbi Elazar on psukim or defining of words. And now the Gemara here came back to those psukim in Divrei Yamim about the death of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and we ended off yesterday with Ukavod Asulo B'Moto, was that they put a yeshiva by his kever. Now the Gemara continues to explain that pasuk, Tanur Banan, Ukavod Asulo B'Moto, Ze Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda, that they did him a great honor in his death. This references to Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. Obviously, that is not what the Gemara is saying here, as Rashi points out. It's obvious from the pasuk that it's speaking about Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. You don't need the Gemara to tell you that. That's explicit in the psukim. But it's just the Lishna Deshas. It's pushing through it and saying, all right, that was referencing Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. She'etzu lefanav 36,000 chalutzei katef, that there were 36,000 people with their shoulders born that went out before him. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Tosafot points out over here, is kvod asu lo, lo lamed vav is 36. In Gematria, others point out that Tzaddik is times 1,000. As the Maral says, because the Pasuk in Kohelet says, Adam Echad Me'elef Matzati. And so therefore this idea of 1,000 about this unique individual will multiply 36 by 1,000. That's how you get the 36,000. So the 36,000 is a significant number of those individuals that went forth before him. Now, Chalutzei Katef, Rashi just says that they tore such a big kriyah. They rent in their clothing such a large rip that it fell off their shoulders. Others explain that literally it means to remove the clothing from the shoulders, to expose one of the shoulders, which was an indication of Avelut. And so they went before. I mean, this is a large procession in front of Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. Amar Lei Rabbi Nechemia, Halo Lifnei Achav Asukein? Didn't they do the same thing for Achav? Achav is no tzaddik. He was a king of Israel, but he does not match up to Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. So Rabbi Nechemia says, if that's what you're speaking about, this has nothing to do about the unique qualities of Chizkiyahu Melech, because the same type of procession was done for Achav Melech Yisrael. Tosafot tries to prove that that's the fact, that they had a hesped gadol for Achav based on the Gemara in Megillah that says the explanation of the psukim about Hesped Hadrimon ben Tavrimon, which they explain as being the Hesped for Achav ben Omri, that was killed by Hadrimon ben Tavrimon in the battle with Aram. Tosafot then says, because in the battle there was a large number of troops, then of course they all joined in the procession afterwards, even though it's not so clear, because Achav asks his men to keep him there at the battlefront, even though he was mortally wounded. And then they take him back to the city where he dies at night. So he wasn't out in the battlefield. He wasn't with the troops when he passed away. But nevertheless, Tosafot connects it to the battle, and therefore it says there must have been a multitude of people there, including Bnei Yehuda, because we know that Yehoshaphat came to join that battle with Achav. So Bnei Yehuda were also in this battle. So that would have been a large number of people that would have been present at the Hesbed of Achav. So then, what's unique about Chizkiyahu HaMelech? This is what Rabbi Nechemia says. Elu she'enichu sefer Torah mitato. They put down a sefer Torah on his bier, v'ameru, kiyem zeh, masha katuv bezeh. And they made a statement that he kept whatever is written inside of this. Mar says, v'ayid nanami abdin anochi. We do the same thing. What's the big deal about doing that for Chizkiyahu HaMelech? As Rashi notes over here, that ayid na mafkin and sefer Torah kame gavar rabo. We take out a Sefer Torah in front of someone who is great. I mean, that part of the procession is to bring a Sefer Torah along to indicate the relationship between this individual and the Sefer Torah. And so why was that so unique to Chizkiyahu HaMelech? Mar says, Afuke mafkinan, anuche lo manchinan. The difference is that we take the Sefer Torah out to accompany the mate. We do not put it on his bier. V'ibay tema, anuche nami manchinan. We do put it on the bier, we put it on the mitah, along with the mate. Kiyem lo amrinan. But we do not make that statement, kiyem zeh, masha katuv bazeh, that he kept everything that is written inside of this. So what Rabbi Nechemia is saying is, even if we have practices that are similar, there has to be something unique that was done for Chizkiyahu HaMelech, Whether that was the fact that it was placed on the mitah itself, or whether it meant that they said, Kiyem zeh masheh katuv bazeh, one of those two things was unique to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Even though, as Tosafot points out over here, Gabei Rebbe Huna in Moed Katan, it says, the Asur Lasot came, Mishum, the Asur Lesheva Gabei Mitah Shesefer Tu'ah Munechet Aleh. They didn't do this Rebbe Huna because it's Asur to sit on the same bench, or the same bed upon which a Sefer Torah is placed. I mean, that would be considered to be a lack of kavod for the Sefer Torah to sit on a couch that a Sefer Torah was sitting on, or a chair that a Sefer Torah was sitting on. To sit on the same place, that would be lacking in kavod. So to place the Sefer Torah on the bier of the mate, that would be definitely lacking in kavod. So how does the Gemara permit it over here? So Tosafot comes to a conclusion, the shiny Chizkiyah is unique, Dava Gadol B'Torah V'Masim Tovim B'Yoter. He was unusual, exceptional. Not only was he a king of Yehuda, but a king of Yehuda that led a tremendous tshuva movement. One of the greatest miracles of history took place in his time with the defeat of the Assyrian army without even having to fight a single battle, and that they all die with the malach that comes and kills them while they're laying siege to Yerushalayim. So Chizkiyahu HaMelech is not your ordinary or average person, and therefore whatever is said here is an exception to the rule. Now that's important because Tosafot in other places speaks about the practice that he says we have to put tzitzit on the mate. So he questions that from, number one of the items that we spoke about yesterday, which is loig darosh, that you're not allowed to make fun of a person who has passed away by doing mitzvot in proximity to him, because it looks like you're saying, I can do it, you can't do it. So therefore, we don't perform mitzvot in front of the mate. So over there, Tosafot discusses with regards to putting a talit on individuals that they used to place a talit or tzitzit on the mate. Tosafot brings this issue up in Menachot, Nida, and in Brachot. There, Tosafot says that they discontinued the practice because they ran into a problem, which is that they put tzitzit on people who came the mitzvah of tzitzit. That makes sense. What happens for a person who never wore tzitzit his whole life? All of a sudden you're going to put tzitzit on him at his death? That looks like you're making fun of him. That looks like the wrong thing to do. So what are you going to do? Not put it on that individual? Then it brings to busha at the time of mitah, because you're only going to put on the people who wore tzitzit. Those that didn't wear tzitzit, you're not going to put it on. That's going to be an embarrassment. And we try. We know that from the Gemarot in Moed Katan, that we try to avoid embarrassment at the time of the burial of the individuals. In addition, we have Rabbi Gamliel, who set the standard by trying to create equality in burial, which is that everybody should be buried in the simplest fashion and in a way that is equal for all. That way there's no distinction or differentiation in death, because we all then are stripped of all those trappings and things that give us different status in this world. And now we're going to have to deal with the actions that we took in this world in the Olam Haba. So that simplicity would also seem to indicate we wouldn't want to make a differentiation like that. So here, when they're talking about putting a Sefer Torah, or taking a Sefer Torah for those that were Mekayim the Torah, that again seems to be problematic based on what the Balei Tosafot say with regards to Tzitzit. So here you have the answer. The Balei Tosafot say that this was unique to Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and that we wouldn't consider this to be a regular practice. Even if you say that it was a practice for a great Talmidei Chachamim, they took a Sefer Torah out at that time, still that was unique to leaders of the generation, not something that they did for people who kept the Torah. And people who didn't keep the Torah, they didn't take out the Torah, because that would also be problematic, the same way the tzitzit were problematic. Again, our practice today is to put tzitzit on the mate, but to be posel the talit, to cut one of the tzitzit so that it is pasul. That way, you're not being mekayim the mitzvah, because you cut the tzitzit, but still you have this representation or this idea that they're enveloped in the mitzvah of tzitzit, or going in a talit before a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and also that tzitzit are uritem oto, zuchartem l'kol mitzvot Hashem, that they remind us of all the mitzvot. So for that reason, we do put a talit on the mate, but we're posel it in order not to run into the problem of loeg dorosh, or to, again, embarrass people who did not keep the mitzvah of tzitzit, because here you're not doing the mitzvah of tzitzit in their death. So, Amar Rabbah Bar Chana, Abazlina Ba'adei de Rabbi Yochanan, the Mishal Shmaitito. We were following Rabbi Yochanan, and we were asking him questions. Ki have ayol beita kisei. He was going into the restroom, or here possibly, nafik. He was coming out of the restroom, and that they were talking with him in Torah, but he had to take a bathroom break, and so he stopped. Vaba Beina Minei Milta. We asked him a question, we queried of him. Lo Pashitlan. He did not respond to us. Ad. The Mashi Yade. He washed his hands. Manach Tfilin. He put on his Tfilin. Umivarech. And then he made a Bracha. Bahadar Marlan. And then he spoke to us, and then he responded to us. So it's giving you information that it's not necessarily important to our sugya here, but information about when you go to the bathroom, you have to come out, you have to wash your hands. Then you put on your tefillin. Rabbi Yochanan, we know, didn't go dalet amot without tefillin on, so he put on his tefillin. And then, mivarech. And then he made the bracha, asher yatzar, or whether it was on netilat yadayim. And then he responded to our question, which is the question about this Gemara. Contextually, that's what it's doing here. Afilu kiyem amrinan. Limeid lo amrinan. Even like Chizkiyahu HaMelech, we say kiyem ze'eh mashakatub bazeh. We do say about people, even today, that they kept everything that was written in the Torah. What we don't say is that they taught Torah, which is unique to Chizkiyahu HaMelech, which is that not only was he mikayem kol haTorah kula, he ensured that all of Klal Yisrael was steeped in Torah. That's the Gemara says that they checked from Midana Be'er Sheva, and there were no tinokot, or there were no young children that didn't know Hilchot Tara Vetuma. And that the knowledge of Torah was so great during the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech because he was a great promoter of Torah and learning of Torah. So that's what it says. We do not give that title of the great teacher of Torah to anyone besides Chizkiyahu HaMelech. So even if we say about someone they kept the Torah, we won't say about them that they taught the Torah. Because teaching the Torah, he has a unique standing in that way by the level of erudition and the spread of the Torah that he taught. This is an addition to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is taking one step further and says, we can't say Kiyem Zeh today. We just can't say Limeid, which was unique to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Mar says, Vamar Mar, we just learned this in Kiddushin. Gadol limud Torah, she'alimud mivei lidei maaseh. Torah, Talmud Torah, learning of Torah is great, because it brings to maaseh, brings to action. Mar says, lokasho, halamigbar, halegmure. One is to learn, and one is to teach. So over here, you have a machloket amongst the Rishonim about how to explain this Gemara. Part of it has to do with the Gemara back in Kiddushin as well, how you explain the Gemara. The Gemara there wants to know what is greater, Limud Torah or Maaseh, and the actions doing the mitzvot of the Torah. The Gemara answers in this cryptic manner, which is Gadol Limud Torah, Shalimud Mivei Lidei Maaseh. Learning is greater because learning brings to Maaseh, to action. So then what did the Gemara answer? So here Rashi says, Mevi Lidei Maaseh, Alma Maaseh Adif. Rashi says that's the answer of the Gemara. The Gemara says Maaseh Adif. Because the only reason you learn is in order to facilitate doing. So yes, you need to learn. It's a prerequisite to doing. But in the end, what is greater is actually doing. So based on that, Rashi says, that's what the Gemara answers over here. There's different issues that come up in this hierarchy. If it's simply a choice between you learning and you doing a mitzvah, maaseh adif. Your doing of a mitzvah is greater. On the other hand, if it comes down to a choice between you doing a maaseh or teaching Torah to others, over there, teaching Torah to others takes precedence. So, in this way, you would have a hierarchy, which is teaching others is first, maaseh, action is next, and then limud, your own learning, is last in the hierarchy. That will explain what the Gemara said now, which is Rabbi Yochanan says, kiyem is on a lower level than limeid. Because Rabbi Yochanan says, you could even say kiyem, zeh mashakatub zeh, but to give them the accolade of limeid, that you can't do. The Gemara was perplexed. Isn't Maisa greater than Limud HaTorah? If that's the case, then Kiyem Zeh is a greater praise to Chizkiyahu HaMelech than Limeid. The answer is no. When it comes to learning, Maisa is greater. When it comes to teaching, teaching's on the top. That's the pinnacle, and that's why they gave that compliment to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot, based on the Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Tam says that HaLimud Mivedi Maaseh, the answer is Limud is greater. Limud is greater than Maaseh. Then how do you explain the Gemara over here? So he explains that, by definition, if you say Kiyem Zeh, Mashakatu Bazeh, by definition, he also learned. Embedded in the statement that you kept the Torah and you did the Maaseh in the Torah is Limud, because of that statement in Kiddushin. Statement in Kiddushin says, Gadol HaLimud, SheLimud Mivi Lidei Maaseh. A prerequisite, or Basically, without limud, there is no maaseh. So if you back out logically from that, that means if someone is doing it, is doing the maaseh, then he must have learned. And that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says over here. It's clear that limud is greater than maaseh. Why over here would you give the compliment of kiyem zeh mashakatuv bazeh? Why is that a great compliment? Because embedded in the maaseh is also the limud. But in the end, he learns like Rashi, which is that the hierarchy is the same, which is that when it comes to teaching others, that is the greatest mitzvah that you can do. When it comes to maaseh, maaseh might take precedence because maaseh is an indication of both maaseh and limud. And then limud ha-Torah would be behind the maaseh. But inherently, he believes that limud ha-Torah is greater than maaseh. And therefore, he has to explain why the Gemara over here put it in a different manner. So now, the Rabbeinu Chananel, on the other hand, comes to a seemingly strange conclusion. Rabbeinu Chananel over here says, Uparkinan, we answer here, in the Gemara, Lokasha, Lemigmar hu Talmud Godol, Shatamud miveo lidei maaseh. That when it comes to learning, learning is greater because it brings them to maaseh. Lagmurehu lachrine maaseh gadol. But to teach others, your maaseh is greater. Shma mina de lemigmar hu ulesuke kamei rabbei tvei odif. That too, if the choice is between the migmar, who, his learning, ulesuke kamei rabbei, and to service his rabbi, tvei odif, that's the best. Bekadem alagmure hu lachrine. And it precedes teaching others. So the Rabbeinu Chananel over here sees it the other way around, which is, unlike what Rashi and the Balei Tosafot answered over here, that teaching others is greater than your own learning, over here the Rabbeinu Chananel comes to the exact opposite conclusion. And he says that your own learning is greater than the teaching of others. So therefore, he would have a hierarchy that works this way. Your own learning is top. Maaseh, second. Last is lagmure, to teach others. Your learning is first because halimud mivei lidei maaseh. That brings you to a maaseh. So first things first is to learn. Second thing is maaseh, you are doing. The last thing is to teach others. Many have problems with that view of the Rabbeinu Chananel because it seems strange and it's not really borne out by what seems to be the conclusion of the Gemara over here. But if you look in the Balei Tosafot, they quote the She'iltot. The She'iltot had an alternate girsa in the Gemara. And the She'iltot comes to the same conclusion as Rabbeinu Chananel, based on that alternate girsa. The benefit of the alternate girsa is that it connects back into the story about Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara brought that story back to Rabbi Yochanan, what he did after he exited the bathroom. Why is that relevant to our case here at all? It simply was side information to the fact that he answered a question for them. But all that material seems tangential, and the Gemara doesn't address it all. The She'iltot says that he had the girsa, and in that girsa it explained the actions of Rabbi Yochanan, and those actions are the conclusion of the Gemara. And this is what the She'iltot says. B'She'iltot Rabbi Chai Gon lo garsinan kiyem amrinan li meid lo amrinan. That's not what it has in the statement of Yochanan. Elagoras umanach tvilin v'hadar amarlan. He put on his tefillin, and then he spoke to us. V'tulo, and that's it. Uparicha Gemara. Then the Gemara asks a question on Rabbi Yochanan's activity on his practice. Ve'echav amanach tefillin tchila. Kodem she'omer lahem ha'shmaitata. How did he put on his tefillin first, and then only afterwards answer the question that they had posed? Halo bimud gadol mimaseh. Isn't learning greater than doing? Umushane halamigmar hu. Ha lemigmar halag mure. Depends if you're learning or teaching. Your own learning takes precedence over the maaseh. But teaching others does not take precedence over your doing. That's why you put on the tefillin first. You put on the tefillin first because his maaseh precedes the teaching of Torah to others. So as far as halimud may be the day maaseh, that seems to indicate like Tosafot, that limud is greater than maaseh. That's true. His own learning, that's top. Maaseh, his own maaseh, that's second. The teaching of others, that's last. That's similar to what the Rabbeinu Chananel says, but the Shilta learns out of a girsa explaining the practice of Rabbi Yochanan. That why Rabbi Yochanan put on tefillin first and then taught others is because maaseh goes before the teaching of Torah. You could say, and maybe even reconcile between the two, which is, depends on the ma'aseh. Over here, the ma'aseh putting on tefillin is a ma'aseh begufo. Ma'aseh begufo is not something that someone else can do on your behalf. It's not something that you can use a shliach for. It's something that you must do. Number one. Number two is, with regards to tefillin, we learned this when we spoke about tefillin, that the tefillin are not simply doing of a mitzvah. The wearing of tefillin change or convert the individual into a individual with the Shem Hashem on them. It says, Veru kol me'aretz ki Shem Hashem nikra lecha. That the people of the world will see that Hashem's name is on you. That is, Elu, tefillin shel rosh. That's the tefillin shel rosh. So tefillin are not simply a mitzvah. They are a mitzvah that dictates the standing of the individual, the status of the individual. So maybe that's a unique mitzvah that takes precedence over here. There's also the aspect of tefillin being equated with Shema, Vayayim, Shema, and Limud Torah. And therefore, tefillin might also take a unique status because they're like carrying around the Sefer Torah. The way that the Gemara in Sanhedrin speaks about the Sefer Torah that the king had to take around, it says there that he used to bind it to his arm. Very similar to the mitzvah of tefillin, which is that you're binding basically the oath of Hashem and the Torah of Hashem on your arm. And so again, tefillin might be unique. And that's why that might, ma'asev, tefillin might take precedence. And that way you could reconcile between the Shiltot and the Rashi and Tosafot over here. If you remember in the Gemara in Kiddushin, we also spoke about, Tosafot brings in the Yishomrim there. It's also a similar idea in the Rambam, which is that when it comes to limud, there are different types of limud. There's limud, which is the basics. And then there's limud that's beyond the basics. And so you have to know which one takes precedence. Meaning that when it comes to basic learning, that might take precedence over ma'aseh. To have basic knowledge, to know what to do, and to have basic concepts of Torah, that might take precedence. That learning might take precedence. On the other hand, to expand one's knowledge and to enhance one's knowledge and learn Torah to greater depths, over there ma'aseh might take precedence. And therefore that might be some of the balance that is being brought over here. It depends what type of learning we're speaking about. We're talking about the learning that's the basic precepts and concepts that might precede ma'aseh. On the other hand, when it comes to learning that is in-depth, enhancement, beyond just the simple understanding or information about how to do the mitzvah, then maybe that learning does not take precedence over the ma'aseh. And you could argue the same thing here about teaching. That depends on whether the teaching is teaching for the enhancement of Torah and to plumb the depths of Torah, or is it teaching for the basics that these individuals know how to or what to do when they're doing the mitzvot. So again, you could draw such a distinction here as well, and even maybe differentiate between learning and teaching, depending on what the level of that is. There is a famous Brisker Torah with regards to Limud HaTorah. It's brought down by Rav Chaim Volozhin and Nefesh HaChaim. It's actually probably brought down by the Ramchal as well, and it's mentioned by the Beit HaLevi, explaining the issues of Mamad Har Sinai, which is that there are two types of learning. There's learning Amanat Lasot, and there's also learning, which is learning Lishma. This idea that learning that has nothing to do with Asiya, but learning that's for learning's sake in of itself. It's a big chiddush, and that was really made popular by the Volozhin Yeshiva, this idea of learning that's not necessarily learning for practical reasons. Rav Avadia Yosef, in the introduction to his Tshuvot, rails against that type of learning. It says that it's clear from the Gemara that Lilmod Olamad Lasot is the key type of learning, and that's learning, which is esoteric learning, is not the real type of learning, and that's not real Talmud Torah. But based on that chiluk, you could now explain the difference here in the Gemara as to limud versus lasot, which is certain limud might take precedence over asiyah, and certain limud may not take precedence over asiyah. And you could formulate it both ways, which is that limud that is for ma'aseh must precede the ma'aseh. So therefore that limud comes before the ma'aseh. The limud that's just limud the sake of limud, that comes afterwards. Or you could argue limud the sake of limud is on a much greater level. So that limud comes first. Lomod amat lasot, clearly the asiyah takes precedence over there because asiyah, the whole purpose of the limud is to get to the ma'aseh. So the ma'aseh takes precedence. So based on that distinction within limud HaTorah, you could formulate ways to say over here that there are distinctions in what type of limud, and that would help to explain some of the stirot that we find sometimes ma'aseh is greater, sometimes limud is greater. It might depend on what type of limud that you are speaking about. Now the Gemara continues and says, Am Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Mai Dichtiv. What is meant by the Pasuk? Ashreichem, Zerei Alkol Mayim. Lucky are you those that plant on all water. Mishalchei Regel Ashor V'Achamor. That send out or work with their animals, whether it means that they feed them and they bring them to the watering holes, or whether they use them or utilize them for their work. But these are people that are blessed with all that they need. They have water, and they have their tractors, and they have their haulers. They have everything they need to do the work and to farm the land. So what is the allegorical meaning of this, that these people are praiseworthy? Kolosek b'torah gmilut chasadim. Anybody who engages in Torah and gmilut chasadim, zocher l'nachalat shnei shvatim, inherits the inheritance of the two tribes. Shenemar ashreichem zorei. So now the Gemara is going to explain how the pasuk is allegorical for this, which is vein zriya elit staka. Zorei, those that plant, zriya elit staka, shenemar, Zeru lachem litztaka, kitzru lefi chosed. Says you should plant based on the tztaka, and then you should harvest according to the chesed. So you see that zri'a, planting, is associated with tztaka. Over there, but tztaka is probably not in the meaning of tztaka like we mean it today, to give charity, but the tztaka is in righteousness. It means to do tzedek, and to act appropriately, mishpat tztaka. And then kitzru lefi chesed is that you will harvest based on how much you did beyond being just, or beyond just being righteous. I mean, that tzedakah is ki'ikar adin, means to do what you're supposed to do. Chesed is beyond the din. So you plant based on the tzedakah, but you harvest, the bounty that you will see is based on the chesed, that which you do beyond tzedakah. But over here you see again that zriyach tzedakah are connected. Vei mayim el Torah, and then mayim, water, is associated with Torah. Shemar hoi kol samei luchul mayim, that all those that are thirsty should come to water. And over there, it's speaking about a lack of quote unquote water, lack of Torah, that everybody is going to run to the water to get the knowledge or the deat Hashem. And so here we have zorei al kol mayim refers to tztaka and to Torah. Bezochel l'nachalat shnei shvatim, and then he inherits the inheritance or the lands of the two shvatim. So, because it says zocher kila ki Yosef, he zocher to a, Rashi says over here, kilat chatanim, which is like the canopy of the chatan. He might mean it more literally like the house of a chatan, being that the chuppah represents the house that the chatan brings the wife into. So the kilat chatanim is his zocher to that housing, or to a place to live, or a beautiful place to live. Dichtiv ben porat Yosef, banot tzada leishur. That how charming was Yosef. The girls used to climb up onto the walls to peer over to see Yosef. It's not really clear from this pasuk how exactly you get kilat chatanim from that. Others just say a plain kilah without the kilat chatanim, like Rashi. That still is not so simple to understand. Others say it comes out of ben porat. The word porat is similar to poria, or a bed in Aramaic, or apirion, which is the throne that is carried by the four individuals. It has poles on it, and they carry the throne upon which somebody with significance sat on when he traversed the Rishut Rabin. So maybe that's what they're referring to in terms of the kilah, the canopy that was over them. And he zuched to the inheritance of Yisachar, dichtev Yisachar chamor gorem. Because it says by Yisachar, he will carry the load, he'll be strong, or bones that are hefty to carry the load, like the chamor, like the donkey. So over here you see the word shor and chamor, shor associated with Yosef, chamor associated with Yisachar, and that's what it means, that you have mishalchei regel hashor v'achamor. That's the result of the tzedaka and Torah, is the benefits that were accorded to these two shvatim. Itamrei, some say that this is what it means, that you get the nachla of Yosef and Yisachar. Oivav noflim lefanav ki Yosef. His enemies fall before him like Yosef. Tichtiv. Bahem amim inagach yachtav. Avsei aretz. With them, he will gore together the nations to the ends of the earth. And over there it says, Bechor shoro hadar lo. So over there, Yosef is compared to the shore. And about the shore, it says here, he will have the horns, he'll be goring all of his enemies. But zochel bin'ah ki Yisachar, and he zochet understanding like Yisachar, tichtiv, because the pasuk says in Divrei Yamim, u'bnei Yisachar yudei bin'ah li'itim. They were individuals who were knowledgeable in understanding of the times, l'dat ma yaseh Yisrael, in order to instruct Klal Yisrael as to what they do. The Gemara learns from this that Yisachar was blessed with Roshei Sanhedriot, that they were the leaders of the Sanhedrin because of this pasuk. And that also speaks to the partnership between Yisachar and Zvulun, that Yisachar was the one who learned Torah. So over here you have the same idea again, that Shoro and Chamuro were associated with Yosef and Yisachar. And over there it's associated with the defeat of the enemies and the leaders of Klal Yisrael, at least with regards to Sanhedrin and Torah. And so that's associated with the Shor and the Chamor, because Yisachar is compared to a Chamor. It's also good to note that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah also quotes this pasuk. And according to the pasuk there, it says that the one who does tzedakah and Torah, he will overcome his Yetzer Hara. One who wants to overcome his Yetzer Hara should engage in Torah and tzedakah and Gmilut Chesed. If one doesn't engage in Torah and Gmilut Chesed, his Yetzer Hara will overtake him. So the Rosh Hashanah over here says, or connects between the two of them, and says that we know that Yosef, or part of what made Yosef a tzaddik, was he was able to overcome his Yetzer Hara. That's what the Gemara in Yoma speaks about. In Yosef implicates anybody who is good looking and has everything going for them because he was able to overcome his Yetzer Hara. And we know from the Gemara in Sota that Torah is unique or different than mitzvot, because Torah is megin, protects the individual from the Yetzer Hara. So the Rosh Hashanah sees in this Gemara a connection to that in Avodah Zarah. It uses the same pasuk and says that the rewards here are speaking similarly to what the Gemara said over there, overcoming and defeating the Yetzer Hara. In addition, it's similar to the Mishnah in the beginning of Peah, which is, these are items that you get the reward, b'lam hazeh v'keren kayemet olam haba, which is, not only will you be rewarded in olam hazeh, but you'll also be rewarded in olam haba. Okay, with that we end the first parak, adran alach, arba'a avot. Now we begin the second parak. Second parak is really just a continuation of the first parak, where the first parak had arba'a avot nizikin. Over here, now the parak is going to start to explicate on those. It says here, ketzad regel mu'edet. So here it starts out with the av of regel. Why the Mishnah here starts, or the second parak starts with regel, when we have all the arba'a avot nizikin? For Shmuel, it's easy to understand. Because Shmuel says the word shor in our Mishnah meant regel. So then it would be shor, bor, mave, ever. So for him, regel was the first item mentioned in the Mishnah. So that would make sense that this is the first item that the Mishnah explicates on. Then for Rav, who says shor includes everything, why did they start with regel? The answer likely is because that's what we left off with at the end of the previous Mishnah. And they're left off with regel. The Mishnah back on Tedvav, Chamisha Tamim, Chamisha Muadin, and then later it says, Hashem Muedet Echolet Eroila, but Regel Muedet Lishpor Bederech Hilucha. So the last thing we left off with was Regel, and that's what brings us into this Mishnah, why it's first of the Avot. And since we left off with Regel, now we're continuing in the next parak with, beginning with Regel. Others say that it's associated with the fact that this is the simplest or more straightforward type of Nezek, which is, it's Nezek that happens naturally or happens from just simply going about doing what you're doing. And therefore, that was brought as the first. How to read the first line of the Mishnah is somewhat difficult. Do you read it as Ketzel Arega Muedet? That's the question. How is it Muedet? And then it says, L'Shaber B'Derech Hilucha. The answer to that question is that it breaks things while it walks. So that's one way to read it. And then, as Tosafot brings down, there was a Girsa in the Gemara that says, Avav by Behema. And then it would be l'shaber b'derech hilucha, to break things while it is walking. V'abayimah mu'edet halech k'darka v'lishbor. And the b'ayimah is mu'edet to walk and destroy things or break things while it is walking. So if you put a vav b'vahavayimah, then it would say that the statement before was part of the answer to that question. On the other hand, the re over here suggests that that's not the way to read it. You shouldn't have a vav before v'abayimah. And rather, the statement is this. In the previous parak, we said that regel does things with derech hulucha. So now the Mishnah asks, please give me or explain to me, what does it mean that regel does damage while it is walking? And then it answers, that the beima goes along and does destructive activity while it's walking. Still, the first question of the Gemara is, why is there a duplication of language here in the beginning of the Mishnah? Now, according to the Ravid and the Rashba, they read Ketzel Regel Mu'edet as the question, and then the answer being L'Shaber B'Derech Hilucha, then it's clear why you have a duplication. There is a duplication of language. The Ri still says, even if you say Ketzel Regel Mu'edet L'Shaber B'Derech Hilucha, then to answer afterwards, is almost just repeating the question in the answer. And so therefore the Gemara is going to ask, why? And that's the first question of the Gemara, dealing with that Lashon of the Mishnah. So now, if it was kicking, if it was kicking, or there were rocks shooting out from under its legs, and it broke utensils, Mishalem chatzinezek, he pays chatzinezek, which is sororot that we encountered in the first perek. The problem in this part of the Mishnah is mivaetet. We know that mivaetet is a tolda of keren, not a tolda of regel. So what is mivaetet doing over here? Tosafot says, ein ochanami. Haita mivaetet, agav deshavet sororot, nakad la hacha. Tosafot says, ein ochanami. The Mishnah just gave you an example of keren, and an example of tzorot. Why did it group them together? Because they're both using the leg and ending up with chatzi nezek. One because of keren, one because of tzorot. So Tosafot says, Ein hachanami, that embedded here is a keren, but a keren that looks like the tzorot, and therefore it put them together. The Rashba suggests that no, the mevaetet over here is different than that by keren. The mevaetet by keren is where the animal kicks and does damage. Kavanatola azik. On the other hand, over here, the mivaetet is where it's kicking the stones, or it's kicking something intentionally. So there, that would not be a din of keren, it would be a din of regel. Even though it's somewhat mishuneh, it still isn't so mishuneh that you put it under the category of keren, it would still be called regel, because he's not doing damage directly with his leg, he's kicking the stones, and the stones are flying off and doing damage, and that already is much more of a dimyon to tzorot than it has to keren. Darsala kli, if he trampled on a kli, vishavarto, and then he broke it, v'nafala kli, and then that kli fell on the next kli, vishavaro, and it broke that as well. Al rishon mishalem nezek shalem, on the first utensil he pays nezek shalem, because that was direct contact from the animal that destroyed it. Val acharon mishalem chatzi nezek. And on the second one he pays chatzi nezek because that didn't come from directly from the animal, but rather the animal's smashing of the first kli, the shards of the first kli, then went and damaged the second kli and destroyed it. So it's the equivalent of kocho or tzrorot. He damaged a kli, and the shards of that kli went flying and damaged the second kli. So on the first kli, it's regel, so he's chayav nezek shalem. The second kli, it is tzrorot, and therefore he's only chayav chatzi nezek. Now, why does it have to tell you that? Because darsal kli, that's just walking. And walking and doing destructive activities, that is what regel is. It's when your leg goes and you stomp on something, and it's walking, and it breaks something. Why is that unique? Or why is the Mishnah bringing this at all? So the Baalei Tosafot say, Omari, the Yitzrech Lashminan, the Sakadatcha, the Mishunehu. We thought that it was unusual. Came into Darsa, Kokach, Bechozek. That he went down with such power or strength, Shenitiz, Hashevra, Kliachev, Shavaro. That the power caused the shards to go flying out and destroy another Kli. So you would have thought that type of force is unusual and it should be keren. The Mishnah comes to tell you that's not keren, that is regel. So that's why I brought it over here, even though seemingly it's obvious that if he steps on something while he's walking, that that is regel. So the answer is that it was such a strong step that it caused the shards to go flying and destroy something else. Maybe that's not called walking normally anymore. Maybe it's called intentional damage. Kamash Malan, that's not. It's still, even with that type of power coming down, it's still considered to be regel and not keren. So the Rashash over here says that the Chiddush over here is not in the first Kli, but in the residual Kelim, which is that Al Acharon, when the Mishnah says Acharon, you only use Rishon and Acharon when there's something in the middle. Otherwise you'd say the first Kli and the second Kli. The fact that the Mishnah switched from Rishon and then went to Acharon seems to indicate there was a chain reaction. That's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. Not only is Kocho considered to be Tzorot, even Kocho. Second derivative Kocho is still Tzorot. So if you smash one Kli with his foot, that's Nezek Shalem, that's regel. That Kli destroys the second Kli. The second Kli then destroys the third Kli. He'll be Chayav Chatzi Nezek all the way down the line because it's all considered to be Kocho, even though it's derivatives of Kocho. And that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah over here. Tana Golim, Mu'adim, Le'aleich Kidarkanu, Le'Shaber. Chickens run all over the place and it's normal for them to do damage with their feet or with their bodies as they move around. So not only is this applicable by Be'ema, it's also applicable by Ofot. Hayad Dalil Kashur Biraglav. If there was a rope or a string around its leg, Rashi says, Kol Davar HaNikshar Biregel HaTanagol Kari Dalil. It says a more generic statement that anything that is tied to the leg or caught on the leg of the chicken is called a dalil. Others suggest that a dalil is more particular to a string or something that normally the chicken gets entangled with. Oshayah mehadeis, where he's doing the chicken dance, mishaberet hakelim, and he breaks kelim, mishalem chatzinezek. That he does pays chatzinezek over here again. It's not where he did direct damage when his dance, but his dancing, either because of the wind or his moving around, caused damage. And therefore, it's called srorot, or again, the dalil, the string, or whatever was attached around his leg, hit something. So again, that's a derivative of his goof. And so therefore, it's called srorot and not called gufo. And that's why you're bichayav, chatzi nezek over here. The Rabbeinu Chanana on daf yutet amud bet, when this sugya comes back up in the Gemara, over there he says that the definition of what happened here is, perush, the kli moved or shook because of the string that was around his leg, and that's what caused the damage over here. There is a machloket between the Rosh and the Rambam as to how to define here the difference between regel where you pay nezek shalem and chatzi nezek of tzrarot. What is the transition or what is the definition of when you're chayev nezek shalem? And what is the definition of when you're chayav chatzi nezek? The Rosh says that the way to define it is this way. Something that's shover takelim derech hilucho avi regel, umishalem nezek shalem. Something that's done while he's walking and does destruction, he pays nezek shalem. Aval, im davar mazik ein mechubar leguf habeima, it's not attached directly to the goof of the beima, then b'shashem mezik when he cracks sorot. That is called sorot, ben shieh bo mamash, meaning that anything that's detached from the goof, that's called tzrorot. Anything that's attached to the body, that is called regel. So that would be what the Rabbeinu Chananel was referring to when he says that this string did damage when it flew off the tarnagol. That it went flying off the tarnagol. Why did he not have it be when it's still attached to the tarnagol like Rashi did? Because for the way the Rosh defines it, that's not called tzrorot. If it's attached to the goof, that's still called the nezek of regel. If it's detached, then it's called tzrorot. So over there, the rach, or the Rabbeinu Chanan, when he said that it's the string released from him and then did damage to the kli, as opposed to Rashi, who says anything attached to the leg is called regel, the difference is exactly those along those lines. The Rosh sees that as being regel if it's attached, so therefore he has to have it released. And that's maybe what the Rabbeinu Chanan was saying. On the other hand, the Rambam, in the Perush of Mishnayot, defines it as Ha'ikar bazeh, the major point to know here is, Amin kulo min ha'nezakim, shkol nezak shiyavo min ha'beima, kshishi osa, ma shemitnaheg lasot. If it's engaged in normal activities, things that it normally does, tamid, ola rov, something that it does all the time, or in the majority of circumstances, normal for it, zeo marlav kidarka, that is called kidarka, and you are mishalem, mezek shalem. V'shalo kidarka hu, and what's not normal is, it's not a common activity for the animal to engage in. Or it comes through a derivative action. He's not the primary force that is doing this. That is chatzi nezek. You see, the Rambam's distinction is not like the Rosh. The Rosh says it's all attached or detached. That's the way that you define regel versus tzrorot. The Rambam says the two different definitions. One is the frequency of the activity. Something that is very frequent for the animal to engage in, that's called regel. Something that's infrequent, that's called tzrorot. In addition, he says, something that comes from pal rishon, from the direct action of the animal, that's called regel. Something that is a derivative action of the animal, that's called tzrorot. So you see, the Rambam defines differently or slightly differently the definition of tzrorot versus what the Rosh does. The nafkamina might be what Rashi and the Rabbeinu Chananel are arguing about, the string on the leg of the tarnagol. Rashi says if the string's attached to the leg and it does damage, that is tzrorot. That'd be like the Rambam. The Rambam says that it's not a direct action of the animal, it is the indirect action, meaning he's swinging the string and the string then does damage. That's an indirect action. That'll be tzrorot. For the Rosh, it's attached to its body. Therefore, it's considered to be regel. And so that nafkamina, the Rach, who says that the string has to go flying off, of his leg is similar to the Rosh, which says it has to be detached in order to go big hall Tzura Rot. So there you have a nice nafkamina, right in that definition of Dalil, of the difference between the definition of the Rosh and the definition of the Rambam for Eretz Tzura Rot. Right now the Gemara says, Amalei Ravino Lerova, Hainu Regel, Hainu Beima. That's what you were all perplexed with in the beginning of the Mishnah, which seems to be there's a duplication of terms. Whether you think that the question is, Ketzal Regel Muedet, and then it says the same thing twice, or whether you say that the answer is repeating the question in the answer, you have now Regel mentioned, and then you have Beima mentioned. Amalei, so Rova responds to him, Tana Avot, Viktani Toladot. One is we're talking about the Av, which is when the damage is done through Regel, and the Toladah is when the body of the Behemah does the damage. Rashi says the Av here is Regel, and the Toladot are the Behemah Mu'edet La'alech Kedarkadu Sheber B'Gufa U'Bisara B'Shalif Shaleh Derech Hiluha. In that anything that is Hezek, that's not done by literally the foot or the hoof of the animal, that is called a Toladah. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel says that the Av is the Regel, and the Toladah is what's mentioned next in the Mishnah, which is the Bi'ita. So, Ella Mi'ata Seifa Diktoni. Now, what are you going to do with the next Mishnah? The next Mishnah that deals with Shein says, Hashein Mu'edet, HaBehema Mu'edet. Over there, it says the Shein is Mu'ad, and Behema Mu'ad, again, a duplication of language. My Avot, or my Toladot, Ika. There's no Avot and Toladot over there. First of all, because Shein is pretty straightforward, but also because the Mishnah over there, you can't say that Behema is different than Shein. When you're talking about Regel, you can talk about the body of the Behema being different. When you're talking about Shein, the body of the Behema is no different than the Shein HaBehema, but also the Mishnah itself does not enumerate the Toladot by Shein, which Tosafot says over here, I'm not sure why. It says, Amai Lotana Nami Toladah B'Shein, come over Regel. His question is a good question, but there is a bigger question underlying his question, which is, why did the Mishnah over here speak about subcategories of Regel? And when it came to the Mishnah of Shein, it did not speak about the subcategories. But given that fact, your explanation is nice for this Mishnah, but it doesn't work in the next Mishnah, and therefore it can't be the right explanation. Jokingly, Rova says back to Ravina, I answered one of them. You should answer the other one. When I explain the Mishnah of Regel, you explain the Mishnah of Shein. The time am I. Umar says in the end, what's the reason that it duplicates it over here? I'm Ravashi, Tana Shein de Chaya, Tana Shein de Beima. By Shein, why is it duplicated over by Shein? So the Ravashi says is Tana Shein de Chaya, Tana Shein de Beima. Over there it's talking about two different Shein. It's talking about the Shein of Chaya and Shein of Beima. One is the wild animals, the other one's the domesticated animals. Sakadat Chamino, I would have thought it says Vishilachet Biro. It says over there, you send Biro. Biro is Beima. That's the translation of the word Biro. And therefore it says, you would think that the zikin are only applicable by Behema. Behema in, chayalo. The Mishnah comes to teach you that chaya is subsumed in Behema, which is not brought here as a proof, but is brought in other places, whether it's from Shabbat, where the Torah equates Behema and chaya in Shabbat, or it's by Kashrut, which it says over there in the Parshia of Kashrut, Zota Beima Asher Tochlu. These are the animals that you can eat. And then afterwards it says, Ayal, Tzvi, V'Yachmor. And Tzvi and Yachmor are Chayot. So under the heading of Beima, it lists Chayot. So you see from that, the Chaya is subsumed under the word Beima. So Beima can have two meanings. Beima can mean generically all animals, or Beima can mean only domesticated animals. So when the Torah uses Beima, in most cases, it means all animals, unless it specifies to you that it's behema, meaning only those domesticated or kosher animals. So here, too, the Mishnah is indicating to us, through the duplication by Shein, that the nizikin apply both to chaya and to behema. That's how Rashi explains how we know that chaya is bichla behema. Balei Tosafot bring the limud from Shabbat, but we say that even though it says behema, it meant all animals that have to be resting on Shabbat. And Tosafot favors his interpretation because of the fact that it includes not only Chaya, but Ofot. And our Mishnah specifically mentions Ofot as well. And that's according to some of the Rishonim why the Gemara focused on Shein for this limit of Chaya and Beima, not on Regel, because the Mishnah already mentions Ofot explicitly by Regel. So it's clear, indicated in that Mishnah, that Chaya is Ofot or Bichlal Beima, and then probably Chaya as well. And that's why they didn't interpret the regal and behema in our Mishnah the same way that they interpreted it by the Shein. That's the case. It should have written it first. Which one is the one that is more obvious or from the Pasuk? Behema. So behema should have been written first. And then it should have said Shein afterwards, which is referencing to Chaya. Because behema is what's explicit in the Pasuk. Chaya is the derivative of that, or the subcategory under behema. So why is the order in the Mishnah just the opposite? It says a Shein mu'edet techolet ra'uila, which you say is referring to Chaya. And then you say behema afterwards. So it's putting Chaya before behema. So the Gemara says, that's the Gemara says in many places. Something that comes out of a drosha is more chaviv, and therefore he puts it first. So therefore I spoke about chaya, then behema. Iochi reishanami. So too over here, reisha means here. By regel, why don't you say the same thing? Over here we said, what was the duplication of regel? Regel is, we said the avot, and then we said the toladot. So why don't you reverse it and put the toladot first? Because they are derivatives. They aren't things that you know out directly. So it says, iochi reishanami litnei hai deloktiva bereisha. Write or enumerate those items that are not explicitly written first. It says, achirashto. Can't compare the cases. Over there, they're both avot, and it's a question of order. So you have two avot, which are on the same level, and a question of order. So it gave precedence to the one that came out of a drasha. Over here in our Mishnah, shovik av, v'tani tolada. Doesn't make sense to put the tolada before the av, even if it's a derivative, even if it's something that's learned out. There's still a hierarchy that exists. That hierarchy would say put av first, then tolada second. So, in the other Mishnah, where it's both avot, then you could talk about which is more beloved, something that giving precedence to one over the other. But if you're talking about something that has a stark contrast, like av and tolada, it makes sense to put the av first, and then the tolada second, just from a logical sequence. Ibai teima. Some say, aidi de salik mi regel, potach beregel. Since it ended off with regel, it opened up with regel, and that goes back to what we said before. Why is this Mishnah found over here is because, so since in the first perek, the Mishnah back on Tedvav, Chamisha Tamim, Chamisha Muadin, and then later it says, Hashem Mu'edet Echolet Aroila, Varegel Mu'edet Lishpor B'derech Hiluha. So the last thing we left off with was Regel, and that's what brings us into this Mishnah, why it's first of the Avot, as well as maybe why the first thing mentioned in the Mishnah is Regel, which is Ketzad, it's referencing back to Ketzad Aregel, and that's what the way the reread the beginning of the Mishnah, which is Ketzad Aregel Mu'edet Lishaber B'derech Hiluha, was referencing back to that Mishnah, which said in the Mishnah, one of the Mu'adim, is that Aregel Mu'edet Lishpor B'derech Hiluha. So the Ketzad is clipping that out of that previous Mishnah, and then asking, explain that to me. Give me more definition to that. And once we know by Shein that Chaya and Behema are equated, then we will say the same thing by Regel, that Chaya and Behema are equated, because it's just coming to Megala Milto. It's coming to teach you that over here, the word Behema is not exclusive of Chaya, but here the Behema means all-inclusive Behema, which includes Chayot. Once you've already indicated that, first of all, Shein and Regel come out of the same Pasuk, but once you've indicated that, that's applicable to all of the dinim here, all the avot nizikin, chaya and behema would be equated. We happen to put it in Shein, but that's where we learn it, because that's the place where you would have thought otherwise, because of B-E-R-O. But then, once we clarify it, it's true by all of the nizikin. Tan Rabbanan, behema mu'edet alech kedarka ulshaber. The behema, it's normal for it to engage in a behavior where it does damage while it's walking. Ketzad, give me examples of that. Behema shenichnasa lechatzer nizak. The animal enters into the chatzer nizak. We know b'stei acher. Shein and regel are patur b'shut rabim. So it has to be in the property of the one that is being damaged. Vezika bigufa derech hilucha. It did damage through its body while it is walking. Ubisara derech hilucha. Or its hair or its mane got caught in something while it's walking. Bukaf shaleha. With the saddle on its back, it gets caught on something. Ubi shalif shaleha, or the load or the saddle bags that are on it. Ubi prumbia shibipia, or the bit in its mouth. Ushibizug bishavara, or the bell that is around its neck. Any of these items that do damage, they are considered to be regel and damage done derech hilucha. This seems to be more akin to what the Rosh said, that when it's attached to the body, it's considered to be regel, because all these items are attached to the body. For the Rambam, what you're going to have to say is, because they're attached to the body, in a way that's the normal way for these animals to have a bell and to have all these items on them, That's not called tzrorot because robe of the animals have these types of trappings on them, and therefore it's considered to be normal. And that's why it's considered not to be tzrorot, even though if they do damage, it might be considered secondary because it's not the animal itself, but it's an item that is a derivative of the animal. Or you could say that the fact that they are attached, and these are items that are attached strongly to the animal, it becomes part and parcel of the animal, and it's as if the animal itself is doing the damage. V'chamor b'masa'o, or a chamor that damages with its load. Now, even though it already said that by ukaf or b'shalif, it still mentions the masav, a chamor, because the way that the load is put on a chamor is it's somewhat detached from the chamor itself, less directly on the animal. So you'd have thought maybe that's not called damage through regel. The answer is, even though the masa'o on the chamor is somewhat less attached or strongly attached to the animal, it's still considered to be quote-unquote kufo. So in all those cases, mishaleg nezek shalem. Sumchus omer, so now we have the Tana Sumchus coming in and saying, tzrorot, v'chazir she'en uver bashpa, v'zik, mishaleg nezek shalem. Tzrorot, or a pig that has got its snout in the garbage, you pay nezek shalem. Hezik, pshita, of course that does damage, you have to pay for the damage. Ela ema hetiz v'hezik. It's doing hataza. It's doing something that's causing things to fly out. So it's not the pig's snout in the ashpa that's causing the damage, but his digging and putting his snout in to find the food and strolling around the stuff, things are shooting out. And those things that are shooting out are what are causing damage, or basically the equivalent to tzrorot. So there you pay nezek shalem. In that case, you pay nezek shalem. The Gemara says that the brayta that we just brought has some non sequitur in it. It gives you, it says, ketzad aregel muedet. How is the regel muedet? It gives you examples. All of a sudden, Tzumchus starts talking about tzrorot. Where did that come? It came out of the below. It had nothing to do with the first half of the Mishnah. So that's what it says, tzrorot mandekar shemayu. The fact that Tzumchus here brings up this issue, whoever mentioned this issue, when it says, asure mechzera, you're missing the transition between the Tanakama and Tzumchus. V'achitani, tzrorot ki rochayu, tzrorot while come out or shoot out from, while he's walking normally, chatzi nezek. You pay chatzi nezek for that. V'chazir sheyeg nover ba'ashpa, Beitiz vezik, if you have this pig that is digging away in the garbage piles for food and things are shooting out and they do damage, shalem chatzi nezek. That's another version of tzorot. Sumchos omer, tzorot v'chazir she'enover v'ashpa, beitiz vezik, mishalem, nezek, shalem. You pay full nezek. So here you have a fundamental machlok in between Sumchos and the Tanakama as to what the penalty is for tzorot. The Tanakama, the Rabbanan, believe that the penalty is chatzi nezek. And Sumchus believes that it is Nezek Shalem. Whether Sumchus has the Halacha of the Moshe Mitzinai is questionable, meaning that does Sumchus have the Halacha of the Moshe Mitzinai, which tells him that you would have thought that Tzrorot are not damaged? It comes along and tells you that Tzrorot are Nezek. And now that Tzrorot are Nezek, you're going to pay Nezek Shalem like anything else. Or does Sumchus not have the Halacha of the Moshe Mitzinai because he just simply sees Kocho Kigufo? The Kocho and Gufo are equated. And so therefore, you're chayav nezek shalem. This has nothing to do with Halacha Moshe Mitzinai. That might have to do with what we spoke about the other day with regards to what is the Halacha Moshe Mitzinai by tzrorot. Is the Halacha Moshe Mitzinai that you pay chatzi nezek? Or is the Halacha Moshe Mitzinai not only that you pay chatzi nezek, but that it's also a derivative of regel? The more you think that is embedded in the Halacha Moshe Mitzinai, the more likely it is that Tzumchus also subscribes to a portion of that Halacha Moshe Mitzinai. The more limited the Halacha Moshe Mitzinai, meaning that it's only defining for you chatzin ezek, the less likely that Tzumchus subscribes to the Halacha Moshe Mitzinai. There's also an interesting machloket here between Rashi and Tosafot with regards to tzrorot. Over here, Rashi claims that when the pig is digging in the pile and things are shooting out, he says that's called tzrorot because he says, Chomashu kocho velo gufo karurei tzrorot. Anything that is a derivative is koach and not is guf, that's called tzrorot. Somewhat akin to the Rambam's definition, which is, it depends on his direct involvement versus indirect involvement in the item. But Rashi seemingly thinks that whatever the pig is doing here is the same as tzrorot of the regel kicking out the stones. Or in other words, this is also a tolada of regel. Because anything that is tzrorot is under the category of regel. On that end, if you look in the Balei HaTosafot, he says, Ashmoyon tzrorot tishen delahanato kovit. The Gemara is saying over here is that tzrorot is not unique to regel. You can have tzrorot that's also a derivative of shein. Shane has a tola that also is sorot, the pig, which is eating away and chomping away with its snout in the garbage pile, lahanato, for its benefit and enjoying itself, and things are shooting out in the process. That's sorot to Shane, because it's like Shane that he's getting hana'ah. Whereas Rashi says, no, it's like regal, because that's the normal behavior of the pig. Anything that's the koach of the animal, not the goof of the animal, that's called sorot, and it's under the rubric of regal. Again, that might go back to what we just mentioned before, the lacha l'moshe misinai, how extensive is it? Is the lacha l'moshe misinai simply that it's chatzi nezek, what you pay? What category goes under is not part of the lacha l'moshe misinai, that we figure out. We understand that if it's walking normally and stones are shooting out, that's regal. For that reason, maybe Shane also has sorot, like Tosafot is saying. The other hand, if you think the lacha l'moshe misinai is telling you both that it's sorot and that it's a toladav regal, then even if it's the pig with its mouth and eating away and doing sorot, it still will be a toladav regal, because that is the lacha l'moshe misinai, that it is a derivative of regal. So that might impact on this machloke between the Rashi and the Tosafot over here. Tarnagolim shayu mafrichim mimakom lemakom. They were flying around, fluttering around. V'shavaru kelim, and they broke utensils b'kanfehem, with their wings. Mishalem nezek shalem. There they pay nezek shalem. For the Rosh, that's because it's gufo. For the Rambam, because that's the po'el of his goof. The goof itself did the damage. Beruach shebekan fehem. If it is the airflow that is coming out from under their wings that causes the damage, shalem chatzi nezek, they pay chatzi nezek, because that's sorot for the Rosh, because it's detached from the body. For the Rambam, because that is his koach, and that is goof that's doing the damage. Sumcha somer nezek shalem. Sumcha says you pay nezek shalem. This is the sumchas that we just saw. Tanya Idachim, another bright that says, Tanagolim Shayum had the sim. Agav Yisa, they were dancing around on a piece of dough. Valgabe Peirot, or on top of fruits. Vitinfu Onikru, and they either dirtied it, or they pecked away at it with their beak. Mishalem Nezek Shalem. Then they pay Nezek Shalem. So again here, either because it's their direct body doing the damage, or it's the action of their body that's doing the damage. Helua farot sorot, if in their process of dancing, they caused dust to fly up. And that is what ruined the payroad or the dough. They weren't directly on them, but rather their making of a mess and causing dust to fly over the place is what causes the damage. Shalem chatzi nezek. There you pay chatzi nezek. Because again, for the Rosh, the thing that did the damage was not attached to the body. For the Rambam, it's the koach. It's not the goof itself that did the damage, it's rather the wind flow that moved the dust onto these items. Sumcha somer nezek shalem. Once again, Sumcha says you pay nezek shalem. Tani idach, have a third braita. Tanagol shaya mafriach mimakom namakom, yatzta ruach mitach knafav. It was flying around from place to place, and airflow was coming out under its wings. Shibrata kelim, and then it broke kelim, mishalem chatzi nezek. That pays chatzi nezek. Over here, Sumchus is absent from the Braita, and so he's not arguing in this case. The Gemara says, Stamak Rabbanan. You can assume here that that Stam Braita is like the Rabbanan, and that's why Sumchus is not mentioned, because the authorship is attributed to the Rabbanan. There's nothing there that would indicate that Sumchus had changed his mind, and he's a part of that Braita. Amarava, Bishlamas Sumchus Savar Kochol Kugufodami. Okay, Sumchus we understand, and that's what we mentioned before, that Sumchus simply says, Kochol Kugufo. And if kokoku gufo, of course you're chayav nezek shalem, because it's no different than doing damage with your body. Ela rabbonon. I gufo dummy. If kokoku gufo, kule nezek by the shalem. You should be chayav for the full payment. Vi lav kugufo dummy. If it's not similar to the body, chatzi nezek nami lo le shalem. You shouldn't have to pay chatzi nezek. You shouldn't have to pay at all. You have to make a decision. Either kokoku gufo, and you should be fully chayav, or koko is not like gufo, and you should be completely exempt. What's this business of chatzi nezek? The answer is, Hadamai Rava, the olam could gufo dummy. It is like it's goof. And so technically you should be chayav for the full amount. That is the lach of the Moshe Misinai, that by kocho you only pay chatzi nezek. And that's what we said. Everybody agrees that chatzi nezek of tzorot is a derivative of regel, or toladav regel, because there it's mamona. It's for sure mamona. It's not a question that it's a knas, because here the Gemara says explicitly that you're chayav for the full amount. Kochol kugufo, and your chayav for the full damage. The Allah of the Moshe Misinai took it down to 50% payment of damages, but not because technically you're not chayav for the full amount. You really are chayav for the full amount. Just you got a deduction, you got a dispensation from the Torah to only pay 50% in this case. Again, this would support heavily that the Allah of the Moshe Misinai is specifically about the chatzi nezek aspect about it, not about the fact that it's a toladav regel. So it would be supportive of the Rashba who viewed the Halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim to be more limited in nature. Amar Rava, Kol shebezav tamei b'nezakim mishalem nezak shalem. Anything by a zav where you'd be considered to be tamei, then you pay nezak shalem. Kol shebezav tor, anything by a zav that would be tor, b'nezakim mishalem chatzi nezak. Over there you pay chatzi nezak. As Tosfot already notes over here, this is not an exact equation. It's just a general framework for which to work with, because Zav has some unique dinim which don't have application by Nezek. But the basic idea, as Rashi notes over here, Shebezav Tamei is Negiya Mamash, direct contact. Shebezav Tor is when it's Zarak. If something's thrown or released by the Zav, then you are a Tor. So the difference being whether you come into direct contact with the Zav, or you come into the contact with the Zav through an intervening object, something that was thrown to you or thrown away. So that's the difference between Nezek Shalem or Nezek Begufo and Chatzi Nezek Tzororot, which is Nezek that derives from something that shot out or was released from the body. Rava Tzororot Ato Leyashminan. So wait a minute, what did Rava just say here that's a Chiddush? We know that Begufo is Nezek Shalem. We know that Tzororot, which is Kocho, is Chatzi Nezek. And that's all you just described to us. It says, look, Rava Egla Moshechet Bekaron Kamashman. He's teaching us about a calf that is pulling a wagon. And it comes to teach us the Chiddush there, that with regards to a Zav that is sitting in a wagon that is being pulled by a calf, if the wagon rolls over items, then those items become Tamei Midras HaZav, as if the Zav sat on those items. So the Karon, or the wagon, is seen as an extension of the Zav. Similarly, when it comes to damage, the wagon is seen as an extension of the behemah. That means that if an animal is pulling a wagon, then that is called nezek of regel or nezek bigufo, the equivalent of the animal's goof doing the damage if the wagon does damage while it's pulling it. On the other hand, if stones fly out from under the wheels of the wagon, that'll be the equivalent of tzvarot, similar to the when stones fly out underfoot from the animal itself. And so what Rava's chiddush is that a wagon or items that are attached to the behemah are still considered to be the goof of behemah and not considered to be tzorot. You could have argued that when it's pulling the wagon is kocho. And therefore, if the wagon did damage while he was pulling it, that would be tzorot. Rava comes on and says, no, that's goofo. That's still deemed to be a part of his goofo. Either according to the Rosh, because it's attached to him, that's how it's saddled up. Or according to the Rambam, because that's considered to be the normal way for animals to be conduct themselves is to be pulling wagons, and it's his body, or maybe considered to be an extension of his body, similar to what we saw before by the saddle and the other items that are there. And now we have Tanya Kavati, the Rav, we have a brighter that supports Rav's understanding. Beimah mu'edet l'shaber b'derech hiruchah. Ketzad? Beimah shenichnasa l'chatzer anizak bezika begufa derech hiruchah, does damage with its body while it's walking. Ubisara derech hilucha, with its hair while it's walking. But ukaf shalea, or with the saddle on it. But shalif shalea, or the load that's on it. Uprumbi eshvipia, or the bit in its mouth. Bezug shibitzavara, the bell around its neck. Vechamor b'maso, and a chamor with its load. Ve'eglam moshechet b'karon. So we have an additional item that wasn't in the previous brightot, which is an animal that's pulling a wagon. Mishalem, nezek shalem. You pay full nezek for that. Alright, so it's equivalent of a tractor trailer. By a tractor trailer, we don't say that the driver is only responsible for the tractor and not the trailer. The trailer becomes a part and parcel of the tractor. And therefore, any damage that's done by the trailer is the responsibility of the driver of the tractor. And it's the same thing over here. The egla is the equivalent of the tractor. The trailer is the wagon. And so therefore, the damage done by the wagon is seen as being directly connected to the behemah and not being a derivative of the behemah. Rabbeinu Hanano brings an alternative view about what the explanation here is, that if a Zav and a Tahor are sitting together in an Agala, even though they're not touching, Arelu Tumeim, because if the Zav causes the Agala to move in any way, that makes the Tahor Tamei. And similarly over here, Kiyotze Bo Ayoshe Bagala Moshechet Im Hazav Tamei, Kachem Ayu Bagala Moshechet Kelim V'Nishberu Chayav. So too, if the Agala was pulling along Kelim and they broke, the person who's sitting in the agala is chayav to pay nezek shalem. So your moving of the agala, your contribution to the movement of the agala, makes it as if you did the damage directly. Tanu Rabbanan. Tanu Golim shayu mechatzatim b'chevel dzli. The Tanu Golim were pecking away at the string that was attached to a bucket. V'nifsak hachevel, and then the rope tore, v'nishbar adzli, and the bucket or the utensil broke. Mishalim nezek shalim. Over there you pay full nezek for that, because the damage was done from the direct action or activity of the animals. Yeah, that they're pecking at the string that caused it to break the kli, or the kli being released and then breaking, that directly caused the damage. It wasn't that they pecked the string and then the string went flying and did the damage. It was that the release or the separating of the string or the detachment of the string is what caused the damage. And therefore they are directly connected to the damage itself. Bayrovo, darsal kli, velo shavarto. A animal stepped onto a kli, but it did not break it. V'nit galgel. On the other hand, it did set it in motion. V'nit galgel makom acher v'nishbar. It rolls somewhere else and then breaks. So for instance, he's walking on the road, and then he knocks over a kli. The kli does not break, but it goes rolling to the curb side, and then when it hits the curb, it smashes. Mahu, what is the din here? Batar mi'ikar azlina v'gufehu. Do we go after the beginning of the process, what set it in motion, which is that the kli went flying and then got broken, but it was in motion. The in motion is what caused the damage, and therefore it's as if his goof did it, and it should be nezek shalem. Or maybe we go after the end result, which is that the kli only broke when it hit the curbside, and therefore it's rot nenu. It's considered to be a derivative koach and not the direct goof of the animal. So is this nezek shalem or is this sorot? Depends on how you view when the damage is considered to be done. Is the damage done from the time that he causes it to go into motion? Then it's gufo. If it's only done once the way kli is broken, then he's not chayav nezek shalem, it'll only be tzorot, because it's derivative of his koach. Tifshot le mid rabo. Let us at least try to answer that from a statement of rabo. Dama rabo, zora kli mi rosh agag. Someone who throws a utensil off the roof. Ba'acher v'shavero v'makel. Then someone else comes along and smashes it with a baseball bat. The guy throws it off the roof. If nothing else happens, it's going to hit the ground and smash. But before it has a chance to hit the ground, there's a guy standing there with a baseball bat, and he takes a swing at it, and he breaks it. So he says, patur, damrinan le'mana tzvira tabar. He's patur because he broke a broken kli. The kli was dead already. It was going to break inevitably. If it hits the ground, it's going to break. It has enough force, we know for sure it's going to break. Therefore, when he hits it, he broke a broken kli. What you see from here is that it's batar mi'ikaraz linan. We go after the in motion. The kli is not broken yet. The kli is not broken until it hits the ground. Yet we call it as if it's broken from the release. So you see here from here that the release is the determining factor for when the kli is considered broken. So too by the Beima. As soon as he releases the kli and it sets it in motion, it's considered as if broken if the result is that it breaks. Ramban has an unusual way to view what Rabba's opinion is over here, which is not only is the guy who smashed it with the baseball bat patur, but also the guy who threw it off the roof. That's because Rabba believes that you go after the shvirat kli. Therefore, the guy who threw it off the roof is not chayav because he never actually broke the kli. The guy's hitting with the baseball bat also is not chayav because the kli would have inevitably broken. And therefore, the Ramban says, according to Rabba, both parties are patur, the one who threw it and the one who smashed it. Although other Rishonim view it simply that Rabba's statement is that we go after Tchilat, the Zrika, and the guy on the roof is Chayav, the guy with the baseball bat is Patur, and that's what's simple to Rabba. Where it says, Enochanami, the Rabba Pshitale, Rabba Mibayile. For Rabba, it's Pashut that that's the case. Rabba is uncertain as to whether that really is the case. It's interesting over here that Tosafot makes a big distinction here with regards to, for instance, throwing the kli off the roof and then taking a baseball bat and taking a swing at it. There, the item that is going to be broken is in motion and inevitably will be destroyed. Therefore, when you break it, you broke something that was broken already. On the other hand, if someone throws a stone at a kli, and inevitably, if you don't do anything, the stone will crush the kli, and then you go and break the kli, you would not be patur over there. That's not considered to be manatavra. Manatavra is when the object itself that will be broken is the object in motion. Then it's already considered to be dead when it's in motion. But if something else is in motion, and then you go ahead and do something to the object that will be hit by the item in motion, that is not considered to be breaking a broken kli, because the object itself is not yet broken. The case that Tosfot is speaking about is if you throw a ball off the roof, it's going to smash a windshield. So the guy takes a baseball bat and smashes the windshield before the ball gets there. Tosfot says that there the guy would be chayav, because he didn't break a broken kli. The kli that was in motion is the ball. The thing that's going to be broken is the windshield. The windshield is yet to be in a process of being damaged or dead already. Because of that, when you smash the windshield, you're responsible. On the other hand, if you threw the glass clee off the roof, that's already dead from the moment you have it off the roof. That's in motion. If he hits the bat on the clee, he will not be chayav because that clee is considered to be dead. So that's a distinction that Tosfot makes. It's an important distinction about when the clee is considered to be dead. And it's only when that object itself is the one in motion and inevitably will be damaged. It's not when something else is inevitably will damage the eventual clay, that doesn't make it as if it's broken already. And Tosafot wants to prove that from Sroverot. Because if you thought that when the stone was in motion, the clay was already shavur, then you couldn't have chatzi nezek Sroverot. Because anytime the stone went into motion and it was going to destroy the clay, then it was already nezek directly from the animal and would not be considered to be a derivative of the animal. But the Sota Choshen claims that there are the other Rishonim that argue on this view of the Balei Tosafot. It's now, Gemara says, Tashma. Hidus enu mu'ad, v'yesh omrim harizeh mu'ad. So now it says, hidus dancing is not mu'ad. Some say it is mu'ad. Where it says, hidus sakadatcho, you're talking about dancing? But dancing, of course you're mu'ad for dancing. Chickens run all over the place and dance all over the place all the time. Of course he's mu'ad. Why would you have a machlokin and a breita whether hidus dancing out of chickens is considered to be mu'ad? It's so obvious that it is. Ela, it must be, lav hidus v'idiz. It's a case where he's dancing around and things are shooting out. And that's Trorot, Ubahaka Miflege. And this is the machlok between the Breitot. The Marasavar Batar Mi'ikar Azlina. One Breitot says that we go after the origins. Marasavar Batar Tavar Mana Azlina. And one says that we go after when the Kli is broken. So this animal is dancing around, and then it sets a Kli into motion, which breaks when it goes flying. So again, there, the machlok and the Breitot would be, is it the fact that the chicken, while it was dancing, set it in motion? So therefore, Batar Mi'ikar, we go after the origins of the motion, and they would be responsible Nezek Shalem. Or do we go after the end result, which is when it smashes, that's when the Nezek happens, and therefore it'd only be Tzorot, and would not be considered to be Migufo. And that'd be the Machloka between the Breitot over here, where it says, Lo, Beitiz Tzorot. We're talking about here where it's dancing around, and rocks are shooting, and rocks or pebbles are shooting out. Uploto de Sumchos, Virabonon Kamiflegei. And they're arguing in the machloket of Sumchus and Rabbanan whether you pay Nezek Shalem or Chatzi Nezek. Because if you consider it to be Mu'ad, that means that you consider it to be, quote-unquote, normal behavior, like Sumchus. And since you're Mu'ad, you're going to pay Nezek Shalem. So it's almost a borrowed term from Karen, where Mu'ad plays Nezek Shalem and Tom plays Chatzi Nezek. So same thing by Regel. Things that are more normal course, or things that are a natural outcome of the animal, that you pay Nezek Shalem. That might be part of the Rambam's definition, the Perush Mishnayot. Over here it's saying it in Sumchus, but you could argue the same thing in the Rabbanan. The difference between Regel and Sroverot is exactly this difference, which is how normal is it? Is it Mu'ad for this? Mu'ad means it's a very normal activity. Stones throwing out may be normal, but it's not a normal activity where you would consider it to be a Mu'ad. And therefore, the machloket here is whether it's mu'ad and you pay nezek shalem, or it's not mu'ad and you would pay chatzi nezek, or the same machloket that we saw between sumchus and the rabbanan. Okay, we're going to stop here on the second line on the top of Yudchet Amud Aleph.